Welcome back to Uncle Lee. I realised I did not have my hat on last week, so I apologise for that, but got it on this time. All right then. So as per usual, if you have any questions for this segment, just leave them in the comments. I will add it to the list and I go through them progressively. All right. All right, let's start with some shameless promotion, shall we?
In a world where magic meets reality, embark on a journey of self-discovery and transformation with Lee W. Johnson's personal magical training. Unleash the power within you as you delve into the secrets of ancient wisdom. Lee W. Johnson, a seasoned guide in the realms of magic, invites you to join a transformative experience like no other. This isn't just a course, it's a portal to your own potential. Explore the mysteries of the universe, connect with energies beyond, and learn to harness the forces that shape reality. Whether you're a curious novice or a seasoned practitioner, Lee's personal magical training adapts to your unique journey. From mastering spells to unlocking your intuition, discover the extraordinary in the ordinary. Uncover the secrets of the cosmos and awaken the magic that resides within you. Enroll now in Lee W. Johnson's personal magical training. Embrace the extraordinary. Your magical journey begins here.
Okay, so today, I'm doing some questions from, it's a difficult one, user BT1KX3FV6X. I'm sure you know who you are and you will be tagged. I did go and check your actual name on your YouTube profile, and it's Russian, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce that. So I'm just going to keep it, call you user, okay? I do apologize for that. All right, so there's a lot to go through here. There's a lot of context with the questions as well. So I'm going to read through all of it. There's two questions, so I'll split it into two sections. But I'm going to read all of it, and then we'll go into an answer. So bear with me. The first question. Some demonologists write about demons being commanders and being in charge of demonic military forces, legions, Gog, Mingog, Dilgog, etc. So do they, demons and other spirits, actually declare wage end wars? If so, then against whom and for what purposes? Why are there conflicts among the divine intelligences? How humans may be connected with these issues, why would such demonolaters as Dukant mention this information in their hierarchies, why should a practitioner know it, what would be the difference between working with such demons, commanders, and other deities? So basically, a simple way to put this is, what should we know about spiritual warfare and how it might influence our practices? And some context to the question. Currently, I think it is like Sutekh, also Seth, Setesh, a defeating symbol of evil, chaos and lies, Apep each night, which might be interpreted as gods cleaning the universe and trying to prevent astral parasites and harmful thought forms from breeding. I am aware some myths about gods making war against one another are basically just political historical texts with mythological flavor. War of Troy for Greek pantheon, conflicts between two lands for Egyptian pantheon, even monotheistic Gazawats and Crusades, wars between different branches of Christianity and Europe for that matter. The idea of ancient deities conflicting between themselves as astral spiritual realm is not one I seem to understand. Like, why would they conflict unless there is a reason transcending their age and experience? And if we break away from the external, entities, approach and try the idea archetype approach, it works even worse. Why would an idea need a legion? Okay, so it's kind of difficult to answer this question because we don't really actually know. What you'll find is a lot of it is mythology, and mythology is not fact. In a lot of cases, it's could be considered storytelling in order to bring across a point. But it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter which pantheon you look at. There's usually a war, or was a war spoken of. You know, we can go into the Norse deities. They fight each other all the time. The Aesir and the Vanir had a war, and they brought that pantheon together to make one. We have the in the Hindu tradition, we have the Devas and the Asuras, who are at war. I'm trying to think of another one. There's several of them in the Greek pantheon. There's lots and lots of wars between the Titans and the Olympians. It was basically kind of the kids taking over the parents' role. So, you know, in that case, it's kind of like a progression from one stage to another. And when we move from one age to another age, there's usually a period of disruption. And I mean, I think we've actually just seen it ourselves. We've experienced it in the past 3-4 years, moving from this earth energy into an air energy, and you know, that rebirth that's happened in the cosmos, in the planet itself. We've seen it, that there's been disruptions, it's been chaotic the past few years. So that can be viewed as a war. A war is destructive, but also, hopefully, at the end, something productive comes out of it. When we look at human wars, that's not always the case. But I think in this case, when we're looking mythologically, that's kind of the case. What do we need to know about it? Do we need to worry about it? I don't think we do. It's not really... I don't think it really spills over into our own practice, except in a manner of understanding those mythologies, following along, understanding the storytelling process, really. But, you know, why do they do this? As I said, could be mythological. But at the same time, when we look at those mythologies, those stories, and we look into things like the Fae, the Djinn, things like that. They have communities, they have societies, they probably barter, or they may have some kind of monetary exchange for goods and services. They have religion, they have their own gods. It's exactly the same, well, not exactly the same, but, you know, their communities and their societies are similar to what we experience. So there's no reason why they wouldn't fight amongst themselves. They probably do have jealousies, and all such things. So it's to be expected, you know. It's just because they are divine intelligences, they are higher beings, and things like that, doesn't mean they are removed from that situation, really. They still exist. They still, although they are part of the whole as we are, they're still individuals themselves. They have thoughts, they have feelings. So, you know, if you've got feelings, you're going to experience those feelings in different ways. And sometimes that causes conflict. So, but how does it affect us? I don't think it really does. As I said, apart from just understanding the progress of the stories, the mythologies, the lessons that it's trying to teach us and things like that. And as you mentioned, you know, if we look at, for instance, Kali holding the severed head, that's got to do with Kali removing your karma and things like that. So there's a lot of symbolism that comes into play here in what one person may view as being sadistic or evil or something like that. Another person will see the actual symbolism that it represents. So, you know, you have to also view it from that perspective. All right, let's go on to the next question. What would be your advice on building relations with spirits correctly and fixing possible mistakes on that path? And then going into details and context. I feel I might have messed it up quite badly. I try to work with my spirituality myself, try everything and build everything on the foundation of my own personal experience. I try hard to work on, write down and review, but I think here I might need some input from somebody who has experience. I started my spiritual practices with deities about 5 months ago. I just worked with one deity. The next month, I decided I wanted to honor more deities, so I added three more from the same pantheon. And now, after adding even more deities, including the elemental kings from demonolatry, the problem is I can't figure out if I do everything right. Okay, there is more context. I'm going to talk about that first, though. So, I do this myself. I do exactly the same thing. Worship one specific deity from a specific pantheon, and then somebody else comes along and I add them. I don't necessarily have to add them, but I do. I feel like I need to worship and honor them for the help they've given me, for the relationship we are creating, and everything else. And I'm going to come back to how do we deal with this in our real life. So you end up with 10 or 15 deities that you're trying to honor and worship, as you would, with an altar, giving offerings, etc., etc., etc. It's not necessary. And it doesn't mean that you do go on to say, actually, let me just read the rest of it. On one hand, I feel it might be too late to try and figure it out by removing spirits from my personal pantheon, from my altar spaces. I mean, I feel I would be slightly hurt if my devotee would suddenly stop making usual offerings and sending prayers, even if I am a billion years old. On another hand, I feel I should actually find a way to discern it for multiple reasons. It might impede my practice, it might be cardinally wrong. What if I actually try all this time to work with some spirits who would like it more if I stayed away from them? And I feel fixing my mistakes and overcoming this awkwardness and fears, it might breed. Would actually make a good offering to those whom I really should focus on. And sometimes I even feel I could be unattractive to any spirits at all, and all my practice is just me desperately trying to do something I can't excel in, and all my making offerings, praying, reading, studying, making notes, making sigils, performing rituals, meditating, sleep work are in vain. Okay, so you've got a lot of doubts, a lot of questions, and that's actually good. It really is very, very good. It means you're questioning, and if we're not questioning, we're not moving forward, not progressing. We are not expanding. So keep questioning, and doubts are also good because it makes you question. But to get back to the point, so if you are we're trying to worship a lot of demons or a lot of spirits, gods, goddesses, demons, angels, etc., all at the same time, you don't have to. What you can do is have your main god or goddess, or god and goddess, and you sort of use those as an overarching kind of energy for all of them. So if you have a god and a goddess that you particularly or are particularly connected to, and maybe you haven't found that yet, maybe it's still to come, and that's fine. Then you just change, when that particular god or that particular goddess comes through. You don't have to have that particular god or goddess at this point in time. You've only been doing it for 5 months, so allow yourself breathing room and time and space to actually progress and develop. But if you've got all these gods and goddesses and demons and what have you that you're trying to worship at the same time, just know you don't have to. It doesn't mean that you're rejecting them. They're still there. You work with them when you need to work with them. You go and visit them when you want to go visit them. You may want to just go and have a chat with one of them at some random time. And this is why I said I'm going to come back to how would you handle this in your actual life. So you may be married and you may have a spouse. That's kind of like the one person you go back to every day. Then you have your friends. If you are polyamorous, you may have multiple people in your life that create different relationships for you. And that's kind of the same thing. So you have that one person that you come back to every day, but you can go and sit with a friend and have a drink with them. You can go and watch a movie with another friend. But it doesn't mean that you have all of these friends or all of these lovers in your house at the same time. Some people do, and they can manage that, they can handle it. Other people don't, they can't handle that or manage it. So it's really the same thing. You don't have to have all of them in your house at the same time. You can go visit them at different times, but you have that one that you always come back to. And that one kind of, although it is independent of all of these other deities, you can use it as sort of a representation of all of them. So if you want to split that into a masculine and feminine aspect, then you can have your one god and your one goddess, and those would represent the aspects of all the gods and goddesses within your own personal pantheon. But you don't have to have them all in your same, all in your house at the same time. I hope this is making sense. This is very, it's kind of very similar to some Hindu religions, Hindu movements, where, and we can even come back to something like Dion, just a saying of Dion Fortune, which got adopted by Wicca. All gods are one god, all goddesses are one goddess. I can't remember the rest of it now. And there was one initiator or something like that. It's kind of, it does start to fall into the pantheistic aspect of things. But you can use it in that manner if you want to view it that way. I mean, obviously your own worldview is going to determine how you do this. But, trying to give you possibilities. So you can, as I said, use that one god and that one goddess to represent all of them. I do tend to, I work with a lot of different spirits. I don't say good morning to them, to all of them every morning. I do have a particular set, and it's more than two, that I stand and say good morning to every morning. But they're just particular. They are spirits from different groups and different pantheons that I work with. But it may be two from each group or pantheon that I actually have representing those particular spirits. But again, I could just work with Hecate and Pan, for instance, and then just work with them on a daily basis, give them offerings, with the understanding that when I give Pan an offering, all of the gods that I worship are also getting an offering. And when I give Hecate an offering, all of the goddesses that are within my personal pantheon get an offering. You can do it that way. There's a variety of different ways you can go about this. There really are. And it really does boil down to how you personally view things and what feels right for you. And you're still trying to find that. You're still trying to find your way. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's going to take a while. But I will say, you are doing it right. You said you are making notes and you are reviewing. That is very, very important. Keep a journal. Make sure that you put as much information in the journal as possible so you can come back to it and you can do your reviewing. You can compare notes. You can see what worked and what didn't. So if, for instance, you are at the moment trying to worship 10 different spirits, on your altar, then get rid of eight of them and just worship two. Stay in contact with them. As I said, you can go and have a drink with them. You can sit down and have a chat with them whenever you want to. But as far as your worshipping and your altar space goes, there's only two, or maybe even one. Keep making your notes, keep journaling, and come back and see what worked, how you felt, how things were affected in your daily life. But give it a good period of time. I'm talking like, you know, a good testing period is probably 6 months, I'd say, because a lot can happen within a month, but it might not be enough time to actually compare 1 month to another month. You know, that month could be ruled by a particular zodiac sign or a particular planet, but when you move into the next month, nothing's actually changed in your life, but you get different results because all of a sudden you have a different planetary influence that's coming in. So, you know, a good 6 month period will give you a good idea of what's actually happening and good comparative notes. So, you know, keep going with that. Keep journaling, keep making your notes, keep reviewing, and keep experimenting. That's really it. Test, experiment, and see what happens and see what results you get. Okay, I think you're doing all right. I wouldn't worry too much. Don't worry about insulting the deities or the spirits. I mean, you did say, where was it? I feel I would be slightly hurt if my devotee would suddenly stop making usual offerings and sending prayers. They don't really get offended. You know, these are kind of eternal spirits. If you stop doing your devotions, they're not going to get offended. They're just going to move back for a while. There may be a particular reason, and it may be fated, why you have stopped doing your devotions toward a particular spirit. It may be that that spirit was only supposed to be there for a particular period of time to put you on a particular path or teach you a particular thing. And then you stop your devotions and that whole thing could be fated. So, you know, you can also look at it from that perspective of, was it fated? You may not be a hard fatalist, that's fine. You may be, you know, leaning more towards free will. But all of these things come into your own personal worldview and how you see things and how you view things. And don't forget that that's all going to keep changing through your life. It never stops changing. It should never stop changing. If it gets fixed at any time, then you stop progressing, you stop learning. And that's kind of sad. But yeah, just carry on. I don't see any problems, really. So I hope that helps. All right, so that's it for this week. I did say I was just going to do this one, the user's questions, because I thought it would be quite involved. So that's it, and I'll see you next week. Have a good one for now. Cheers, bye-bye.